We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
From Illinois Public Media, this is Focus on WILL Radio and online at will.illinois.edu. My name is Celeste Quinn, our technical director, Jason Croft, the producer for the program, Harriet Williamson. Historian Gerald Danzer has compiled a history of Illinois that tells our story through drawings, photographs, and maps. Danzer says, in the final analysis, state history is a way to connect personal and local experiences to national affairs and global perspectives. We'll take a look at those connections this morning. Historian Gerald Danzer, the author of Illinois, A History in Pictures, is our guest. This history begins with the physical geography of the state. From there, it is very much about the people who have lived in this place, from very early residents to those of us living here today. These stories are organized by periods of time, including the era of French settlements, the 19th century, statehood, the Civil War, Great Depression, and globalization. Each chapter begins with a narrative offering us an overview of time and place. The pictures with detailed descriptions follow. Listeners, I invite you to join the discussion with a phone call or by email. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Our toll-free number, 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Gerald Danzer is a professor emeritus of history at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He's the co-author of many history textbooks. He's also a former director of the Chicago Neighborhood History Project. Illinois, A History in Pictures is published by the University of Illinois Press. 333-9455, 800-222-9455, and will-talk@illinois.edu. Gerald Danzer, how are you this morning?
Well, I'm doing fine. I've got a little bit of an allergy problem, but that's to be expected in this kind of weather.
Yeah. Oh, and it's sticky here in Urbana this morning. So what led you to write a history of Illinois that is pictorial?
Well, we were trying to reach the broadest possible audience, and this might be considered the first shot in getting ready for Illinois' celebration of its bicentennial of statehood, which comes up in 2018. Now, 2018 seems like a long way away, but the idea originally was to publish a book that people could pick up, didn't have to read all the way through, could look at one page or several pages, could skip around, but all of a sudden be maybe pulled into an interest in Illinois history. And that would kind of pave the way for some more serious studies, and maybe even a large-scale, multi-volume bicentennial history of Illinois. We did one for our centennial, and then we updated that for the sesquicentennial, but now those books are 50 and 100 years old.
Yeah.
So maybe it's time for us to get serious in Illinois about our history and develop a large-scale history. And that was kind of the strategy behind this book.
Well, we're off to a fine start then.
Well, thank you.
I'd like to begin with recent history, because we're talking here about the future and our 200th birthday. The final chapter of the book offers a look at where we are early here in the 21st century. It also offers really a glimpse, a little bit of a glimpse into the future. It could be the first chapter of another book. And this chapter includes 15 images, and one of them is a satellite image of Illinois. Why did you include that?
Well, it's a great way to get all of Illinois into one picture. You see, the problem you have in doing a pictorial history of a state is to kind of give equal voices to every location. And there are some opportunities you have to look at the state as a whole, mainly through maps. And in this case, it's a remote sensing image, and it's rather striking. And unfortunately, it's not as big as we would like it to be. It would be nice to have a big wall size image of that satellite view and be able to look at it in more detail. But even with the reduced size, putting it into a book, I think it's you can read it. If you spend enough time with it, find where you are on the map and kind of go around and explore, and all of a sudden you'll see that the view from space is a familiar space.
And it also points out the diversity of the state from bottom to top, top to bottom, side to side.
It certainly does.
There's another image in this chapter I'd like you to talk about, speaking of diversity. It is a photograph of a settlement house in Chicago, the Howell Neighborhood House. Why did you include it, and what is the Howell Neighborhood House?
Well, that was a neighborhood settlement house that began when this was a Czech immigrant area. And, of course, the Czechs moved out. And Hispanics moved in, and it was then turned into a cultural center for the Mexican American community in Chicago, and it's still a vibrant center. And when the Mexican artists or people with a Mexican heritage, when they came to Chicago, they thought that their community center should be covered with murals. And it's a very striking pictorial image, and it recognizes the very the extreme importance of the Hispanic immigration to Illinois in the last 40 or 50 years. And that's where our growth has come from, basically, as a state.
Yeah, and it also reminds us of being of our history as immigrants, all of us, that the state of Illinois, well, just to think back a couple hundred years, there weren't very many people here.
No.
So we had to come from somewhere, so we came from everywhere.
No. In fact, Illinois holds the record. We were the lowest number of people, the smallest population of any state admitted to the Union. We didn't really even have enough to technically get in, but they counted some people twice. But the travelers going to Illinois were counted every time they stopped. So we had enough people to meet the congressional requirement, which had already been reduced from the official requirements. So we do have that record of starting out as a state with the lowest number of citizens.
Yeah, I'm recalling now, I'm going through my notes here, and the 1820 census, our population was 55,000. So other than just sneaking in as a state, what challenges did a small population present at that time?
Well, everybody was looking for development, and of those 55,000 people, most of them lived in the southern third of Illinois, and pretty close usually to the Mississippi or to the Wabash or the Ohio River. So it was the people were confined, and the challenge of Illinois was to go north and to bring in other lands. What happened is a large chunk of Illinois, west of the Illinois River, called the Military Tract. The soldiers in the War of 1812, which ended in 1815, were given a bonus of land. And the land set aside for this was in Michigan, the territory of Michigan at that time. And the surveyors went out to survey this land, and they encountered a wet season and a lot of wet lands. And really, the word got back to Washington that we were going to give the soldiers swamp lands for their valiant service. And so they quickly said, let's get somewhere else. Let's do it in Illinois. And Illinois Illinois then was selected as the site for the military track. And this was thought that it would, you know, quickly swell the numbers in Illinois, but most of the veterans receiving these warrants for land in Illinois sold them to speculators, and the speculators, of course, held them until they could get a good return on their investment. And so the military tract, which was thought to really accelerate things, didn't. Some time before Illinois was settled from the south all the way to the north. And, of course, a significant event was the Black Hawk War, so-called Black Hawk War, in kind of accelerating the exit of the Indians that were still in Illinois. And it also, in the Black Hawk War, brought troops from the eastern states to see the fertile prairies, and that did more probably to accelerate the growth of northern Illinois than the military tract.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's one more factor that enters in here is the Illinois, when it's admitted as a state in 1818, we don't have any railroads. Railroads don't come until for another 10 years. Just beginning in England, and we don't have a railroad in the United States until the late 1820s. In Illinois, you know how important the railroads become.
Mm-hmm.
And it takes a while for them to get rooted in Illinois, and it's not until almost the Civil War that we have really a complete system of railroads. But I'm getting maybe off the subject and maybe being a little too elaborate in the answer. So I'm sorry about that.
No need to apologize. No need to apologize at all. So what were the early big cities? Chicago was a latecomer.
Well, yes, Chicago was a latecomer. And when we say early big cities, they're really larger settlements. They're larger towns. Again, until you get transportation, especially on rails, you don't really have any big what we say we call big cities in Illinois. We had places like Shawneetown in the Wabash Valley, places like Quincy, which was to be the kind of entryway into the military tract. There were some old French towns down at the what's called the American Bottom, that is low-lying plains, flatlands along the Mississippi River, floodplain. But really, we don't have what I would call something that really looks like a city until we have two key events in Illinois. The first one is the railroads to bring people from the surrounding countryside into the community. And the second thing is to put rails on transportation inside the town to enable it to grow beyond a walking city. And those things were eventually called streetcars. First ones were horse cars. They pulled the mountainous large carriages on rails. So we had streetcars pulled by horses or horse cars. And then the key development for Chicago, which becomes the big city in Illinois during the Civil War. That's the development there. When the Civil War starts, Chicago has really only several horse car lines. But after the Civil War, they start developing improvements in rail transportation in cities, and Chicago becomes the largest cable car system in the country. And that's one of the things that kind of overlook is that the creation of a large metropolitan area is a product of the cable car in Illinois. Now, we had other towns that were significant and what we call cities rising at the same time. Springfield as an administrative center and political capital. Rockford, which was on the ford going across the Rock River. But not only was it a good place to cross the river for wagon transportation, but it was also a good place to harness water power. And the Chicago River would never turn anything. So that Chicago was never a water power city, but Rockford was. And then there were other settlements throughout Illinois. If you look at a map, you can see that there, every so often, there is a large regional supply center, a regional administrative center, serving the area, places like Decatur or Charleston. So rather than going through all those towns, but Illinois is a difficult state to write a history of and really to comprehend because it's split from the Civil War on into Chicago and downstate. And then as Chicago develops, it becomes Chicago, Chicago suburbs, and downstate. Mm-hmm. And then the downstate is divided into smaller cities and rural population. And that it's always kind of a difficult thing to pull it all together.
Well, the images and the pictures and the maps and the things in this book help us, I think, get a grasp on such a vast topic, Illinois history.
And one other thing that we specifically designed to try and pull this together are the timelines. Sometimes you can't spend a lot of words making connections, but we developed a timeline sequence in which both what's happening in Chicago and what's happening in the state as a whole or the state beyond the Chicago metropolitan area are placed side by side. And then a third column usually gives the broader historical context with national and even global developments. So each chapter starts with one of these timeline sequences where you can connect what's happening in Chicago, what's happening in Illinois, what's happening in the nation and beyond. And that takes a little work to use, but on the other hand, it's in a one-pager, you can kind of get the whole context.
A lot of perspective on one page. This is Focus. Our guest this morning, historian Gerald Danzer, author of Illinois, A History in Pictures. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, you can join us with a phone call. Join us with your questions, comments. You can also join us by email. The phone numbers, 333-9455. That's the number in the Champaign-Urbana area. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And the email address is will-talk@illinois.edu. Let's talk with a listener now in Belgium on line one. Hi.
Hello, and good morning to you all.
Good morning.
I wanted to point out, and you didn't mention it, in East Central Illinois here, the town of Danville, which played a very strategic part in the state's development. It was probably the very first town in East Central Illinois because it had a salt seep that provided salt for large areas, and it was used by the Plains Indians way before we showed up. The people who migrated into Illinois came up the Ohio, the Wabash, and into the Big Vermilion, and they could go as far north as Higginsville Bridge, which still exists, and there was a large ford there. So most of the people stopped at the Danville area, where there's a lot more water, and the seeps were there, the salt seeps, and they then fanned out into the rest of Illinois. Matter of fact, one individual, Gideon Hubbard, or Gideon Hubbard, actually walked a group of swine up to Chicago and laid out the city of Chicago. He came from Danville. We get short shift here in some ways, but we were a very important place. We were one of the very early towns, 1825, just 7 years after statehood. So would you like to talk about them any?
Well, I agree. In fact, about 2 weeks ago, I was in Danville.
Oh, good.
and not only in Danville, but what the problem is when you're writing a book like this, putting together the pictures, some things have to be left out and some things have to be included. And we got advice from a lot of people, frankly, for each chapter, I had a little map of Illinois, and when we decided on a picture to go in there, I would mark it on the map and try to give balance for everything. But when I got the whole thing together at the end, the one place that we probably underrepresented was that area, kind of in the upper Wabash Valley, and Danville certainly was an important part of that. Indeed.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for the call.
Well, can I just explain one more thing to
you? Yeah, go ahead.
Gentlemen, is that the next step, and if I have enough strength to continue on, and the Lord gives me the life to continue on, the next step in Illinois history is to develop a handbook for each community or each family or each organization, like a church or a synagogue or a mosque or the VFW club, to do their own history. And we'd like to have a little handbook on doing local and community history in Illinois. And that maybe would redress some of the things we have actually had to overlook, given the space limitations of a book that we wanted to have convenient to hold in one's hand.
Yeah. Here you, maybe this would be a good place to talk a little bit about this. You note at some point in the book that geographers make a distinction about place, between place and location.
Yes.
Would you talk about that? I think that's very interesting, and maybe we could talk then about the peoples who have made this place.
Okay. Well, the distinction between location and place is a location is simply a designation that could be by longitude and latitude, or it could be in more relative terms, like next to Lake Michigan or at the southwestern tip of Lake Michigan, or where the Illinois River enters the Mississippi River, or where the Ohio enters the Mississippi River. Those are all kind of locations that you could look for the place on the map and find it. But a place is when you bring to a particular location some associations, some memories, some ways of thinking about it. And the first way, of course, is to give it a name. And then along with the name comes all kinds of other associations. And human beings invest a location with meaning, and then that process turned it into a place.
And the very name Illinois, you note, I think it's at the close of the book, in its most ancient meaning, refers to the people.
That's right. The wonderful experience, when you think about it, is Father Marquette, when he becomes the first, along with his colleague, Louis Joliet, when they come through Illinois, and not only come through Illinois, but also make notes of it, and both of them put in their heads or their notes, they put sketches to make a map of Illinois. So we have the first kind of Europeans to come through Illinois and make a record of their traversing the state. They picture it in cartographic terms. What Father Marquette, before he got to Illinois, spent the winter up in the Sault Ste. Marie area at the Mission St. Ignace. And it so happens that an Illinois Indian was also spending the winter there, And Father Marquette, who was a genius at learning languages, learned the language of the Illinois before he got here. And as a result, when he arrived, he could communicate with the Native Americans, and of course he's the one that gives them the name Illinois. Now, I shouldn't say he gives them the name, because that's the name they gave themselves, and the early French maps, including those of Marquette, picture Lake Michigan as the Lake of Illinois, or the Lake of Illinois. And so we have this dynamic between place and people from the very, very beginning of the European record of the state.
What other associations of people have been important in the state's history?
Well, in terms of the people of the state, I just love to go all the way back to the beginning. And what I mean by the beginning is, when are the first human beings here in the place that we now call Illinois? They didn't call it Illinois, of course. At least we don't think they call it Illinois. We don't know. But it was the archaeological evidence suggests, more suggests, it really documents the fact that there were human beings here in Illinois when the last stages of the glacier was retreating. They were here hunting big game, like mastodons, which we can still find, and we haven't found one with an arrow point embedded in it yet, but obviously they were here hunting these big game animals, as well as gathering plants and hunting small animals too, to be sure. But they were really after these big game hunters, or these big game hunters were really after the larger game for a variety of reasons. But to think of these huge glaciers, and it's not like going to Alaska and seeing a glacier. The continental ice sheets in the Chicago area were between 1 and 2 miles thick. And these ice sheets, as they melted, of course, changed it. As they advanced in them, as they melted, changed the character. But as they were retreating back up to Wisconsin and back up to Michigan, there were human beings here hunting these big game animals. And from them, from these big game hunters, then there is a record of people becoming more sedentary. The big game disappears. The environment, the natural environment, gradually becomes something more recognizable in our experience today. And you have the whole progression of different cultural traditions for Native American peoples, or we'll call them Indians, beginning with people who come right after the big game hunters, called the archaic tradition, then the woodland tradition, excuse me again, and then down into more historic times, when you had the Mississippian traditions. And there again, talk about kind of great human traditions in Illinois, is the Cahokia settlement, and down across what's now St. Louis, which was the largest Indian community in the United States, probably forever, and a city, if you want to call it a city, that rivaled London and the great cities of the old world in its day. So you've got these kind of great monuments of the people who were here before Europeans, and then with the coming of Joliet, Marquette, and of the French coming into Illinois, and the French coming from two directions, coming from French Canada and coming from New Orleans.
Right.
Come both ways, and then you get the French presence, Illinois, then the great struggle between France and England for the control of North America, with Spain also playing a role, all the way up to the fact that finally, in the War of 1812, that's the decisive war. It's what, by the way, we'll be celebrating an anniversary next year for the War of 1812, the 200th anniversary. And that's very important for Illinois because as a result of the War of 1812, the Stars and Stripes could be raised beyond Fort Dearborn. The national flag didn't fly permanently beyond Fort Dearborn, going to the west and to the north, until after the War of 1812. And that confirms that Illinois is going to be part of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then we come to more familiar territory of people like Stephen A. Douglas and Abraham Lincoln and William Jennings Bryan, and coming up all the way down to Barack Obama, all of whom absorb strength from Illinois and develop a perspective which is influenced by the state and its communities.
Mm. If you're just tuning in this morning, we're talking with historian Gerald Danzer. We're talking with him about the story of Illinois. He is the author of Illinois, A History in Pictures. Join us with a phone call or by email, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455, the email address will-talk@illinois.edu. More after a short break. This is Focus.
On the next Fresh Air, writer Sally Jacobs on the troubled life of Barack Obama Sr. She doubts Barack Obama would be president if his Kenyan father had been a strong presence in his life.
I think he would have had to wrestle with a neglectful father, an insecure person, and someone who probably would have prevented him from following the path that he chose.
Join us.
This afternoon at 1 and this evening at 7 on AM 580.
This is Focus. I'm Celeste Quinn. Good morning. We're talking with historian Gerald Danzer today. He is the author of Illinois, A History in Pictures. You can join us this morning with questions, comments. Join us with a phone call, 333-9455, 800-222-9455. The email address, will-talk@illinois.edu. I want to go back and talk a little bit more about the French. I thought this was fascinating, and we talked a little bit about, through the interview so far and in my introduction, about connections, about personal and local experiences, and how they connect on the larger stage. And I thought this was really interesting, that Illinois was in the 18th century called the breadbasket of Louisiana.
Yes. Illinois is like a barrel tapped at both ends by the French. There's a French presence coming from Canada, and there's through the Great Lakes gateway, and then, of course, there's also the Mississippi gateway. And Illinois starts out, it's part of New France, but then in the 18th century, it's made part of up Louisiana. Excuse me again. And that kind of pull of both ways is very interesting. When Jean-Baptiste Pointe-du-Sable comes to Chicago, he undoubtedly comes up the Mississippi River. And so Chicago was founded not through the Great Lakes, but through the Illinois River Valley and the Mississippi Valley. I find that just to be kind of so interesting that we have this kind of dual heritage, if you wish, or dual connections. And it was found that the grain, wheat, French just loved wheat, white bread, French bread. We still do today celebrate that, but some of the best flour for making French bread came from the Illinois bottomlands and was shipped down the Mississippi River, and enjoyed quite a reputation even in Europe, although much of it also went to the bakers in New Orleans and also in the French West Indies.
Mm. So Illinois has always played a role, it seems, from the very first, when we talked about those native peoples, the earliest peoples, hunting the big game. Illinois has always played a role in feeding others.
Well, that's a good point. Thanks for pointing that out. I can make a note of that. Just in case there's another addition or something. But that's an excellent point, that Illinois really is one of its great contributions to the world is in agriculture. And that has been true for, as you say, from the very beginning.
Mm. I think as part of the project for the celebration in 2018, a book of maps of Illinois would be fascinating.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that.
And I wanted to talk with you about that a bit, because I don't know why, but I find maps very, very fascinating, very interesting. For you as a historian, what do they tell you? For example, I'm thinking about this. This spring, you know, Illinois Democrats drew some maps, and these are political maps. And these maps, if they stand a likely court test, will play a role in our history. So maps can be, they can tell us many different stories. What, as a historian, do you gain from them about who we were and who we are?
Well, first of all, I think you picked a good illustration to make the first point, is that maps are not just scientific translations of physical reality. They are tools which people use to exert power and to influence others. They're sales gimmicks, if you wish. And once one begins to think of maps as a communication device rather than as a mirror, so to speak, held up and reflecting reality in very objective terms, you start to see maps as tools and as advertisements and as persuasive devices, as rhetorical constructions. When you begin to see that, worlds open up to you. Then you can start saying, this map, this old map, is not just showing us Illinois, it's showing us Illinois for a purpose. And it has an agenda. It has some arguments to make. And I better be alert to what it's putting on the map and what it's leaving off, how it's portraying the state, all kinds of ways in which the use of symbols and colors and names and even the absences of things that should be on the map but aren't on the map, all those things kind of challenge us to look at maps not as objective statements of reality, but as living documents for their own time and for us to reconstruct that time.
Yeah, we've gotten a question by email for you. Have you or the publisher, the University of Illinois, have any of this available online, on the web? And the listener says, by the way, the history of county maps is rather strange. Can you elaborate on that? I'm not quite sure what the question is there. But why would this listener? Why would county maps spring to his mind?
Well, let me take the first part of the question first, and then I'll try and guess what the county maps thought is all about. But the first issue, will some of this be online? As I mentioned earlier, this is the first shot in getting ready for the bicentennial celebration. And undoubtedly, there's going to be someplace an online resources for teaching Illinois history. Whether it's whether this book will be the thing or not, I'm not sure. I think we would want to do things a little bit more systematically, like the gentleman that called and pointed out that Danville didn't get a picture. And we wouldn't be limited space-wise if things were online. So I would be hesitant just to take the book and put it online. I would say let's develop a schema through the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library or the Illinois State Library or some agency, maybe the University of Illinois, some agency to promote the study and teaching of Illinois history as we get ready to really celebrate. We'll really celebrate better if we know what we're celebrating about. Now, the county maps. Excuse me again. The county maps, if you look at state maps, especially the early state maps, you see that the state, one of the big ways in which you kind of find your way around the state outside of physical geography is by counties. And counties were always considered as kind of little communities in their own right. So that, for example, when Illinois developed a highway system, the highway system was to connect all of the county seats in Illinois. And again, the gentleman from Danville, bless his heart, could have pointed out that the road running from Danville or the Wabash River Valley up to Chicago is still highway number one, state highway number one. So important was that connection between the Wabash River Valley and the settlement to port on Lake Michigan. But the importance of counties as a place of kind of personal identification from the very beginning of Illinois history is very, very important. We tend to kind of overlook the importance of counties today. But in the 19th century and early 20th century, county histories were very important. The people kind of connected to the world through their county seat. And the pictures of the county courthouses, I've got one or two of them in here, which were spectacular buildings once the county could afford it. Sometimes they built county courthouses beyond their affordability. But these great kind of civic buildings on the prairies represent how important counties were. And in the period, especially after the Civil War, an industry developed to publish what were called county atlases. And one of the great centers of production of county atlases was Chicago. And almost all the counties in Illinois have one, two, or three 19th century, early 20th century county histories, or county atlases. We have a history book which gives a kind of a settlement of the area, and then you have these atlases, which are published in Illinois from about 1870 up to about 1920. And these atlases, if you're interested in local history, by all means, go to your local library and find out where you could get a county atlas of your location. You'll be blown away because the typical county atlas would have probably a map of Illinois as a whole, maybe even a map of the United States, a map of the world as they got more elaborate, but certainly a map of Illinois, and then a map of the county, and then individual maps of each township in the county, which would show landowners, the farms divided into various farms, and then the elaborate versions accompanied by pictures of farms and communities and churches and just very rich iconography, not necessarily always trustworthy, trustworthy in the sense that they were recognizable, but if you contributed either by subscribing to the atlas or maybe you even paid a little bit extra to get a picture of your farm in the atlas, and the person who drew your farm would come, and so you'd say, "Well, I'm going to put a gazebo out here in the future. Oh, I'll put that in." So there are always enhanced versions. You must understand. It's just like if you were to ask me to send me a picture of myself, I would certainly not take just a random picture. I would make it the best picture I could possibly get, the most attractive view. I'd even put some books in the background, probably to distract a little bit from my own physical features. But that's exactly what these county atlases did. Yeah. But there, if I could offer the people who are listening one bit of advice, if you're interested in kind of roots of your community back in the 19th century, go find those county atlases and treasure them.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, the next stage, then, of course, are highway maps. When the automobile comes, and even a little bit before the automobile is the bicycle movement, when you need to find your way around on good surface roads, not necessarily concrete or bituminous roads, but if just well-graded roads, the state starts the highway department, and the highway department publishes maps of each county. So again, this idea, 19th century idea, is reinforced in the 20th century down to this day, that one of the best ways to find your way around any locality in Illinois is to get a county highway map. And sometimes these have been put together by the DeLorme publishers and so on. But you get individual roads and names and graded according to their surface and their width, the width of the highway, and so on. And that's how you can kind of reach every parcel of land in Illinois through the highway system and the road system.
Mm.
And the convenient way to do that is county by county.
Yeah. We don't have much time left, so I'm going to kind of come around to maybe a point where we could sum up and look ahead. What are the challenges ahead of us as we head toward this big party in 2018? Let's hope it's a party, 200 years as a state. What are the challenges for us, big city Chicago, small cities, and rural areas?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to mature politically. Illinois has looked bad politically with our governors going to prison and the inability to address problems realistically. But if you wish, the disease is also there on the national level, and people are talking about creating a better future for our children, sometimes by reducing the debt they'll pay, reducing the debt by skipping on public education, which is, I don't know which is worse, to give kids debt or a poor education, to give them a good education and some debt. But those are things which we have not really been able to address. President Obama and the leadership in the Congress are trying to come to terms on things, and we just don't seem to have a political maturity to deal with these things. I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we have on a local and state and a national level, maybe even a global level. We could go all the way. So that's one, and certainly connected with that, our future of our children. I would start with education. We just need to do a better job of getting young people equipped for the future and getting them excited about the present. Maybe even getting them excited about the past. If we could get Illinois history as the Illinois state education standards call for people to start studying Illinois history in the early intermediate grades, and then to continue that study and have that study, that knowledge of their local communities and of their state, their county, and then their state, they're supposed to continue that knowledge as they expand their horizons all the way up through high school. But Illinois history, as it's taught in the schools, has kind of pretty much evaporated as we've looked to other things to emphasize. And, you know, that's on my personal agenda, that's at the top, to try and get the Illinois experience woven into the curriculum, whether it's Illinois authors in literature, whether it's understanding local communities in the geography class, in history class, in political science, whatever it might be, but to kind of get us connected to the broader world through our own communities and through our state.
Mm. There we'll leave it. What a nice way to sum up. Gerald Danzer, thank you very much for talking with us this morning.
It was my pleasure.
Historian Gerald Danzer is the author of Illinois, A History in Pictures. He's a professor emeritus of history at the University of Illinois at Chicago. And this book, Illinois, A History in Pictures, is published by the University of Illinois Press.